You will tell us who you are, just the introduction, your work experience, your qualifications, any conflict of interest in the sector. You know we do security check and qualification check. All that was done. In terms of your qualifications, I think you are among those 10 who are cleared in terms of qualifications. But in terms of credit record, there is something. Let me know when it's better. Otherwise, I'll mess up. There is something around credit records. But there are processes to deal with this matter. Maybe it will be as you introduce yourself and talk about all the things I have raised. You also get into that area just to tell us as to what are doing about it, or what are you, and all of that. So that members at least are comfortable. Me and you are sharing 5 minutes. You say that all in 3 minutes because I've taken 2 minutes already. But again, when members ask questions, you and the member, you are also sharing 5 minutes plus one. So you'll be sharing 6 minutes. I'm raising this so that we are pointed in terms of your responses. You are very direct and short, but without disadvantaging yourself in terms of showing your knowledge of the sector. Over to you, ma'am. Have you taken water? And please take a sip. Water, so that you, I know you are used in this thing, so, but just take a sip of water, so that you would top of that. Yes.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to members of the panel. I'm Lulaba Mokobe, as already has been said, and my qualifications are a degree in humanities and a concurrent diploma in education acquired from the university, the then University of Botswana and Swaziland, and a master's degree acquired from Utah State University. I have a very long history in the sector, having had my first taste of it in 1982, when I was appointed by the then BOP TV to go and start educational radio and television as a member of a group of five. I later led that as a manager. And in the interim, I went off to do the master's degree because I needed to understand a little bit more about the technology that was evolving at the time and how it could positively impact education, and that's how I ended up doing a master's degree in instructional technology. I have spent a lot of time in different sectors, partly because as I moved from the television and radio sector, I would be seeking employment elsewhere, and that's how I ended up doing communications for ESCOM and later the South African Post Office. And then going back again into the sector through ETV, when the IBA, the then Independent Broadcasting Authority called IBA, began its process of creating opportunities for other players within the sector. I was one of the people who were pulled together to put up the bid process, and we won the bid. And so for about a year, I was one of the people who actually started ETV. I became a director of it, and within that, there was also a very small shareholding that was allocated to the management team. But then I left ETV, and when I left ETV, my relationship ended with them completely, including the shareholding. It was effectively cancelled, the shareholding. And later on, I went into the production sector. I've already mentioned the other sectors I went into, mainly as a communications person. I then went back into the production sector as a CEO of Urban Brew Studios, which at the time was one of the biggest production studios for television. And it also did sound and a lot of work within the broadcast sector. Out of that came the opportunity for me to go and serve the SABC as their group executive for public broadcasting. I was there for 5 years. Initially, for the first few months, I headed up television, and when a decision was made to consolidate PBS into one entity, I was then given the opportunity to lead that. And I think during my tenure, I was able to give it real form, and its purpose became very well defined, and therefore it became a highly successful part of the SABC group. When my tenure finished there, and there was restructuring at the SABC, I declined to take another position within there because it would not have been at the same level, but also I just needed to explore other opportunities. So I was away from the industry once more for 2 years. Within that period, I did a little bit of insignificant consulting work until the opportunity to then go back to the SABC as CEO arose. And I was put through process with that and eventually got into the position. I think it is well known that I spent only 2 years within the SABC, and the 2 years were spent largely with me trying to fix the financial situation of the SABC, getting it back into a meaningful trajectory. But it is also well known that there were lots of disagreements, and many of them led to the point where my stay there became untenable and I had to leave. Now, it took me a while after I left the SABC to get back into becoming active again. And that came about because I was asked by certain groupings to assist them here and there with their strategies. And one of them is CIA, who I assisted in analyzing their business model and where it was going and how it could get there. And there were some minor new broadcasters that were not very clear about what they needed to do. And I assisted there. Nothing significant, really. And those were for no remuneration. So if you ask me about conflict of interest, I would say possibly if I'm at ICASA, having come out of the SABC, there could be perceptions of conflict of interest. However, what is very clear is that the function of being a counselor at ICASA is located very, very strongly within the ambit of integrity, sound decision processes, and ensuring that the processes within ICASA are seen as fair and equitable. They may not always please certain people, but there are decisions that have to be made. And if they are made on the basis of what is right and what legislation says and what policy says, then chances of one being derailed by those who may think you're familiar with them and therefore you're their friend and therefore you have to do as they want are extremely limited. Almost they become non-existent because you become known as a person who makes very considered decisions which are based in that which is legal and proper and can be backed by policy, legislation, and possibly a whole lot of research. If I go to the question of my ITC records, there is one report that came from Trekker, which is a trekking company, for 540 rand, which I was actually gobsmacked when I saw that, because it shouldn't have been there. And in fact, Trekker has apologized. They've written a letter and passed it on to, I don't want to name him, but to one of the members of the secretariat of this committee. And it is very clear, it states categorically that I do not owe them and that I'm in good standing with Trekker. The second one is really based on what happened to me subsequently in the SABC. In as much as people thought I received a lot of money, a lot of people pulled out their calculators without factoring in the tax man. To stay for a full 3 years and a few months without employment and relying on the little bit that you have received is not sustainable. And by the time the net bank issue came up, it was because I had indeed not been able to be gainfully employed. And having lived a certain lifestyle, it was impossible to sustain the payments. I entered into an agreement with NetBank, and this was done a few months ago, I think probably slightly over 6 months, and I had proof of it, and which shows that I am paying back. Not at the quantum that they expected, simply because I'm unable to sustain those quantums, but the payment is being made. I requested them to give me a letter similar to the Trekker letter that states very clearly what has happened. And because of their systems, they've not been able to give it to me as quickly as I expected they would, otherwise I would have been able to present it to yourselves. I thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the explanation is clear on those two. Honorable Shin, questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Mokoba, when you were CEO of SABC, that was the time when the multi-choice deal was signed with it, and your signature is not on the deal, that I know, and I think it happened in your absence. What inkling did you have that this deal was cooking, and would you have stopped it? Then the SABC multi-choice partnership with the platform of most of the 24-hour channels, that sort of stuff, if together SABC and multi-choice have put a dampener on the issuing of new licenses, that there aren't that many, much competition for them out there, if you became a councillor, what would you do about that unhealthy relationship between the two biggies? Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Honorable Shin, thank you for that question. I think it's public knowledge now that I would never have agreed to that contract, not in the form that it was in. A question may be posed that, but there was a previous agreement which I was party to the signing of, and I will explain it very quickly. When the discussions with MultiChoice first began, it was on the issue of enabling the SABC to test its capability to run a 24-hour news channel. That was number one. Number two was that At the time, the SABC was not reaching the lucrative markets who would enable the SABC to monetize its airtime on the news. And those markets were typically the people who watched DSTV. And a third argument was, you know, if you're thinking of universal access, we tend to look at it purely from the perspective of the poor. But there is universal access that should indeed be directed at the wealthy, who largely would not have a clear idea of what was actually happening to the ordinary citizens of this country, and therefore would not be able to relate to the issues as they emerged every now and then. So on that basis, and this was during the period when Dr. Ngubane was chairman, we agreed that indeed, given these reasons, they were sufficiently compelling for us to look at piggybacking on multi-choice. And the idea was that as soon as DTT came around, one major thing would have happened. The SABC News brand would have become so well known within South Africa for having been available on a platform that was widely seen within South Africa, but also, in addition, within the continent, because it would also be on the international platform, as I think they call it now. So that, for me, made sense. And the contract did not impose anything on the SABC that was untoward. It certainly did not dictate to the SABC on whether or not it could share its content with other platforms. There was none of that. And there were no further restrictions imposed on the SABC that pertained to, you know, the period over which the SABC could or could not use certain content. So the whole idea behind the archives, which would be utilized effectively and would make sure that the SABC did get some monetary value out of the archives, was taken care of. The money was going to be 100 million rands over a period of 5 years. Certainly not a whole lot of money. But given the strategic imperative that this was going to fulfill, the feeling was that this was the right thing to do. And yes, we had to go through the process of requesting approval from National Treasury, because we're dealing with a national treasurer here. And there was also a clear need for additional funding to be sought for the platform to be successful. National Treasury's response at the time was, it was a vanity project. There was no way that it could be supported by National Treasury, regardless of the strategic imperatives we had put to them. So for a while, that was put aside. Later on, please forgive me because I don't have the exact time frame for this, there was a new deal that was now being driven by Saudi Mutani together with his executive team. And this deal included two specific clauses that created a lot of difficulty. And those are the clauses that have a big subject of debate, and I think are now sitting even within the legal processes of trying to resolve them. I did not agree with that. The one clause dealt with the issue of encryption of set-top boxes, where effectively, if the SABC agreed with the multi-choice, then the set-top boxes would not have encryption. That, for me, was completely unacceptable. Because the Broadcast Digital Migration Policy of 2008 was very clear as to why there had to be encryption. It wanted to allow for mainly, there were other, of course, possible benefits, but the main benefit was going to be for the citizens who did not have the ability to participate in the digital economy that we're all excited about, because they didn't have computers and the data was expensive, they would not be able to afford that. The set-top boxes would have a return path, which would enable an ordinary citizen to be able to access the internet from home. Here, what was critical was ensuring that, in particular, young people at schools who needed to do research would be able to access the internet and without having to spend on data for their telephones or cell phones. And in fact, in that time, the penetration of cellular instruments among the poor was very low.
Okay. Honorable
Good afternoon. Look, I've gone through your CV, I must say internally. I know you have worked SABC and so on. I know the kind of problems you have had in 2013. I know the problem about your refusal to sign. I think it's about two deals regarding SARS and the issue of VAT, etc., etc. Now, further, I know the kind of problems you've had with the board. I've gone through that. Now, what I want to raise is, albeit you were correct, at the moment, this committee will say, we have come up with a proper board. Is there now going to work? Okay. Now, what I wish to check with you is, will you be able to work with SABC at the moment, given the changes that we believe this government has got to make, etc., etc. Parliament, yes, you're correct. Yes.
Chair, if I may ask a question of clarification. When you say
you're correct.
Work with the SABC, do you mean as a counselor or as an employee of the SABC?
No, you are not going to be an employee, isn't it? As a counselor, I mean, ICASA has got to work with SABC, MTDA, etc., etc. So I'm checking because you have moved. There were, I know, very serious problems, not just with the Claudimu training, okay, but and Ngubane, but then obviously with the other people that you had to lead there. Will you be able to ensure that there is peace there?
Honorable Madisha, thank you for that question. I think it goes without saying that there's a certain level of maturity that would be required for anybody to work at ICASA. And certainly, my level of maturity is one that helps me to transcend personal issues and look purely at the good that has to come out of a relationship. I've done that many, many times before. I do not believe that the SABC as an entity was a problem. There were individuals within the SABC who created the problems, the most influential of whom are gone. And I don't believe that when you are dealing with issues of legislation and policy, that personal relationships should interfere at all. I do not see myself having difficulty in working with the SABC at all. I think I've already stated that there are prescripts that one applies or would have to apply in how the relationship was conducted?
I shan't go too far, because I know my chairperson here will say, close your mouth, Willie Madish. But all that is difficult for me, I must say, is to ask very many questions, because you have operated within that realm. So all that I wanted to know is for you to vouch and say, yes, indeed, if I were to be put there, I will be able to do that which is needed, because this is what has got to be done. And I wish to hope, or rather believe, that you know what ICASA has got to do. And this. So if you can vouch, then I'll be able to think. Thank you.
With my hand on the Bible, I do vouch that I'll be able to do that. I'm in the creative industry, so... Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Madisha. We can go to Honorable Ndlozi with an added minute, so it will be 6 minutes.
Yes, my questions, first one is about taking into consideration the struggle of reducing data costs. South Africa, what would be the immediate processes you would implement to force the cost of communication in relation to data to really come down? I mean, do you have ideas? Because the whole day we haven't had ideas.
Idea one would be to create a policy provision that commands and demands that all the service providers reduce their data costs. Idea two would be to have a perfectly constructed analysis of what is feasible. We all know that the service providers complain about the costs of maintaining their infrastructure and about how they have to be sustainable. And they use that as an excuse for not bringing the data prices down. Now, you and I know that those arguments just don't hold, because the profits are extremely high. I would even go to the point of arguing for a certain portion of their profits to be plowed back into and making sure that data becomes available on an almost ring-fenced level for poor people and students, because those are two areas where there is a very intense need for access to the knowledge economy.
Okay, so with pay TV as well. It seems to me that all the time when we are talking about transforming this sector, people are always thinking we can transform it just through competition. And every player that has come up within the pay TV space has not succeeded to stand on their 2 feet. What would be the immediate thing you do to break the back of Kuostek? If you were to be in the helm of ICASA.
I don't know, Rose. I think I need protection there, because I do not think I should be in the business of breaking people's backs. I do understand.
Or do you want me to call it in a rather less direct way?
No.
He's the main actor. I mean, it would be naive to think otherwise. You don't agree?
No, I do agree.
Okay.
I do agree. You see, the greatest difficulty with multi-choice is it was created out of an apartheid system that enabled an individual to grow his business and thrive. And yes, there was a lot of creativity.
I know that. What would
you
be the
that?
Immediate things you do to break the back of course, back.
Regulate and insist on the implementation of regulations of content. Because they win because of the ownership of premium content, which everybody wants to see, and everybody will therefore agree to be on their platform and to pay premiums for their platform because they want the content. It's very critical that new players are given the opportunity on I don't want to call it sliding scale, but on an almost ring-fenced scale, for them to be able to access the premium content. Now, we all know that sports is probably the biggest driver for eyeballs for MultiChoice. They own a vast amount of rights, and that is completely untenable, because by owning those rights, they're effectively forcing the poor, who can ill afford to buy a loaf of bread, to go onto the platform and pay every month a huge, well, they now have a bouquet for 29 rands or 33 rands, thereabouts. But to pay a substantial amount of money for them to have access to sport when there are free-to-air channels which are effectively available to the people for them to access. The other painful thing which I worry about all the time, and I think it must be changed, is that the mass carry regulations give MultiChoice the right to have content from terrestrial, current terrestrial broadcasters. And through those rights, they are able to claim a huge amount of the population, because they ride on the wave that says, if you are on my platform, I will give you all of these, and you don't have to worry about anything else. And I think it's quite untenable. I think the mass-carry regulations must be reviewed completely. And within that reviewing of mass-carry regulations, there has to be a very, very strong approach to ensuring that new entrants are protected. They are indeed protected, and that they not only have access to the content, but are enabled to be able to get their own viewership rising.
Can I ask you, this is a parting shot, taking into consideration that NARSPARS apologized for its place in apartheid. Do you think we should cost and then force them to make that apology into a properly concrete transformation of what they're apologizing for? And if so, how would we do that?
Honorable Josie, I think what you're talking about is atonement.
Your 6 minutes is over. When it's over for you, it's over to her as well. But just summarize your response.
Thank you, Chairperson.
No, I was going to say what he's talking to is atonement money. And I think, yes, it is about time that major money makers atone for the past. And yes, I agree with you. There has to be a certain amount that trickles down to where it is needed.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome, Lulu, to the committee panel. I have only two questions directed to you. ICASA as a regulator is critical to the economy. What is your view about the cost of data in the South African company comparing to other countries?
Data costs in South Africa are actually so high that they're almost criminal. I keep repeating the word knowledge economy. When people do not know how to get themselves out of their poverty levels, they will never be able to do that. And if the access to the information that can enable them to do that is costly, then they will never be able to access that information. And I want to repeat, it is criminal. I think it is very, very important that data falls, data cost falls, and that if it means it's got to be done through legislation, And unfortunately, we're in a country that is able to implement things only if they are legislated. And there is a clear policy provision around that it's got to happen. The whole idea behind liberalizing the EC sector was so that any person can be able to raise themselves out of their poverty while making sure that they have access to every tool that they require. They wouldn't know what tools they can get if they do not have access to the information.
Okay. The main legal responsibilities of council, duty of care, and duty of loyalty. What does that mean to you?
I think when we speak of the duty of care, it once again talks to the impoverished, the marginalized people of this country. If we do not, as for example, with your previous question, if we do not attend to their needs for access to information by reducing data, then it means we don't care. If we care, we would ensure that that happened.
How does ICASA work with MDDA on community radio in a workable framework?
MDDA was created primarily to enable new community broadcasters to develop. Now, we all know that in many instances, licenses issued by ICASA have not worked because MDDA's responsibility of looking after those has been limited by their access to funding in order to help fund their operations. It's extremely expensive to run a radio station. Even if it is a one-man thing with a little desk, it is extremely expensive. And also on top of that, there has to be a total review of ICASA's license fees to community broadcasters. I think the licensees, in many instances, are too high. If the intention, which I know was for people to be able to participate in the radio space or the television space within their communities and thereby engage with themselves on their issues, if that was the true intention, then we really cannot expect the operators to pay so much money when they need it for content and operations.
Okay, the last question, Chair, I'm very sorry, because I said two. Do you think we're managing these aspects very well as a developing country with high poverty and unemployment?
I think at the present moment, there are very real attempts, in particular by ICASA, to help to enable people to access licenses. But as I, with my previous statement, speaking about what they are expected to then pay for them to be able to broadcast and do whatever they want to do, then we are failing. Then there is an element of failure there.
Can you take us through what the ICT technological value chain in South Africa and what kind of a transformation process we must take?
Okay. The ICT value chain goes through a continuum that begins with, once again, legislation. Out of legislation, which broadly covers the different sectors that are seen as ICT, which would include broadcasting, telephony, etc., telecommunications. Out of that legislation, you have policy. And policy then defines very clearly what the implementation levels should be what the actual statistics of every possible item within the policy should be. And then you have the measurement tools at the end of it. And the measurement tools, well, you have the implementation of it, which is the licensing process, where for every player who wants to participate is given a license. The license within it has conditions that are very clear, and those conditions are measurable. And that is the CAFA's responsibility to make sure that the conditions are measurable, and it doesn't matter in what sector it is within the ICT sector. And out of those, you have, you would then be able to have your measurement criteria that are measured on a regular basis, and there would be punitive action taken if people do not meet what they said they were going to be able to do, and there would be relaxations if what they argue were the issues that caused them to not meet their requirements are plausible in any sense. And if there is a possibility for intervention from ICASA, then it can intervene within them.
Thank you, Honorable Kalako.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, still afternoon, Ms. Mukova. Just one question of interest first. Were you not asked or lobbied by any of those you mentioned previously that when you left SABC, you have been helping them on the sector, whether it's for license or obtaining license, like you have mentioned CIF, you have worked with them. None of them in the sector will have asked you to avail yourself for this for the board of ICASA, therefore recommending you.
I think the question is mainly, was I or was I not recommended to ICASA by this group? I think it's important to note that the group structure, ownership is partly vested with Makhatla and Khosinyalala. And that being I don't know if the word tribe is still acceptable, but that being a tribe that wants to participate in this industry, started talking about how they did not seem to be able to get off the starting blocks. And that's how I was then approached and requested to give an analysis. So I went ahead and gave the analysis. And yes, indeed, following having given that analysis, there was a suggestion when the opportunity for the new councillors to come on board that they nominate me. So yes, indeed, I was nominated by them.
But you are sure, as you said earlier, I've heard that, that won't have any bearing in your work and decisions, even on issues related to them in ICASA.
Absolutely. Okay. I think I've been known to be very pedantic about things, very, very pedantic. And everybody understands that we may be friends, but when it comes to issues that require ethical, absolute ethical conduct, I will veer towards the ethical.
Thanks. Earlier you spoke of encryption when you were actually explaining that period you were at SABC. Do you think encryption is still relevant under present circumstances of development in ICT?
Honorable Kalako, I think it will remain relevant for as long as we have the huge population of South Africa living below the breadline and needing to have access to information. Properly utilized, the encrypted set-top box technology can enable people to access information without having to pay for data. Data is very expensive, and that becomes an elegant solution to access for ordinary people, students, old people, their e-government services that have been needing to go into these platforms for the longest of time. People are still unable to access information that they need. They have to go to get into taxis and horse-drawn carts and God knows what else in order to get to the Home Affairs to register the birth of their child. I think it's untenable. I think people must be able to sit at home and using the set-top box, be able to go into a website on registering births and deaths or whatever it is, and be able to do that remotely. They don't have the money in the first place to afford a taxi ride.
Yeah, there's a last question. There's this some view by others focusing on pay TV is rather a bit updated. There are OTTs now. To focus on that, that argument comes when it comes to regulation, especially by those traditional broadcasters who have been there. What is your opinion?
I think it's an elitist view that still focuses on the wealthy who can afford the OTTs, who can afford to buy, to get onto Showmax, and to get Netflix and those kinds of things. It's the elitist. And if we agree that nearly 40%, or in fact the number keeps shifting, I think it's probably higher by now, of the South African adult population is unemployed, how many of them will afford to play in the OTT space? So yes, set-top boxes remain relevant. They remain relevant because those very people can still be able to access quality content, which should be created through the DTT space, and be able to also get the kind of information that they need at a cost that won't kill them.
I don't know that, Henry, whether it's point of order. Proceed, okay. You are not Maradona. just as a last question, I know the field. What do you think was the problem of ICASA for not? There was that complaint about the SABC on censorship. And the complaints committee of ICASA took time to deal with the problem. And between them and SAPC, there was that seemingly SAPC not want to understand that it is accountable to them. Do you think there are played roles there, or is it clear, the act is clear on the relations and functions of the two?
I think the act is very clear. But there will be manipulation if there is a perception that there's a weakness. The people who are demanding accountability are weak. And whoever is at the SABC who has to meet the accountability is strong. And that is what is effectively happened. And yes, the slowness was absolutely inappropriate. I mean, you have facts, and the fact is that is a public broadcaster. It should not be subjected to censorship. And you go ahead and censor, and then the regulator takes its time. It just didn't make sense to me at all. It was a very straightforward case of non-compliance, and that's how it should have been dealt with right from the outset. There was no need to drag it out in the manner that it was.
Thank you. Honourable members.
Chairperson, I didn't get something here. Were you not nominated by Contralesa?
The Bakhatla are members of Contralesa. I'm mentioning them specifically because they got to know me through their participation in CIA and them requesting me to help review the CIA business case. But indeed, yes, they are members of Controlesa, so my assumption would be it is Controlesa on a broader scale, but more directly the Bakhadra as participants at CIA.
I'm not sure if you know that we shortlisted 15 and we are interviewing 13. Two others withdrew. So we are interviewing 13, including yourself. Maybe it would be necessary to tell us why or this that distinguishes you from the 13 or the 12, for us to say this is the right candidate.
Without being presumptuous, Chair, I'm a veteran of the sector. I've seen the best and the worst. I have read and understood the legislation, the prescripts of the legislation, the practice notes, the policies. I have lived with them and through them for many, many years during my participation in the sector. I'm not going to claim to be the best, but I certainly believe that I would bring in possibly very useful experience and ability to see through the muck very quickly because I understand the sector very clearly. And I would say that's, yeah.
So you say, in other words, appoint me because of this characteristics or... Yes.
Yes, Chair.
Members, I think we are done. Thank you very much, Mrs. Mukoba. Mukoba. Thank you, Mukosa. So, and team. Oh, okay. You know, I listen to members when they correct me. So Mrs. Mukoba. Thank you, Mukoba. Thank you very much. Oh, there is a ho. Ah, Mukoba. It's now very easy, Mukoba. Thank you very much, ma'am, for your responses. And well, I can't tell you, you understand the process of appointing councillors and boards. So you will wait until that is finalized. And then you will know your situation. Thank you very much. Go back well. Eh?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members.
All right.
Thank you.